Hi there, I'm Dr. Adam Wiener. This is the Uro-Onc Minute. These are quick insights from the experts in urologic oncology. We're wrapping up our sessions here at EAU 26 in beautiful London. Very excited to be here. We have with us Professor Hashim Ahmed from Imperial College of London. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So today, important topic, we're talking about focal therapy as a primary treatment for patients with prostate cancer. We'll just start by saying, of course, that anyone who's recommending focal therapy in the U.S. and in the U.K., the guidelines we'd support, always doing that within the context of a clinical trial or a prospective registry so that measure outcomes, get a good, safe assessment of that we're taking good care of our patients. But in that context comes the important question of picking the best patient for focal therapy. You're an expert. You're a leader in the field. Tell us about what goes through your mind when you're counseling patients.
Yeah, so first of all, it's important to note that focal therapy is not an alternative to active sedates. It's really, really important. In the UK, less than 5% of our cases are low risk. So if a man is suitable for active sedates, they should have active sedates. Those who do need treatment and are recommended to have treatment because they're not suitable for active sedates, we think anywhere between a third to two thirds of newly diagnosed localized disease cases are suitable for one form of focal therapy or another. The ideal case is a man with a PSA of less than 20, with grade group 2, with an element of maximal up to grade group 3, maybe even a pinch of grade group 4, 4 plus 4, on a targeted biopsy in the middle. But overall, a lesion should be grade group 2, maximum 3, which is localized to one side, and it's contained, so it's T2, not T3. And we can accept, again, a little pinch of grade group 1 on systematic biopsies on the contralateral side, provided the MRI doesn't show anything in the potentially untreated tissue, and even if it does, that you've targeted it really well.
And I think that's one of the first most important initial steps, right, that we're getting as good of imaging as we can, and we're providing as good of targeted biopsy. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your evaluation? How do we get to identify these patients?
Yeah, so in the UK, we're really lucky in that we all use MRI, and we spent a couple of years when PROMISE and then PRECISION came out and the guidelines changed, mandating pre-biopsy MRI. So we are mandated to do it. We spent a couple of years making sure everybody could deliver a high-quality MRI. We spent time with our radiology colleagues to make sure they were very good at looking at them. So we're in the fortunate situation where people come to us with a good MRI. We then do targeted biopsies. I still do systematic biopsies. The EAU guidelines advises that you could omit systematic biopsies. I think in future we probably could, but we need to identify those men where maybe a risk calculator, maybe AI, but some form of additional information to identify those who don't need the systematic. So targeted plus systematic, and it all matches up.
And this is critical, right? So what you're getting at, it sounds like, is, well, we would love to admit some of this biopsy and some of this, the duration of that procedure. But if we're going to potentially recommend someone for focal therapy, it sounds like you want to be absolutely sure we're not missing anything.
So it's not just about knocking out the target that you found. Equally important is making sure you're not leaving significant disease in the untreated tissue, because you're going to get two types of recurrence. And the nuances of recurrence with focal are much more challenging and problematic to deal with focal compared to radical therapy. So you get infield recurrence of the target, and that happens for various reasons, but your outer field recurrence will mainly be understaging. You're going to get disease that was missed initially that then declares itself maybe 2 years later, maybe 3 or 4 years later. De novo new lesions developing, I think, is quite low, but we need to engage our genomic researchers to look at whether these are new lesions or missed lesions in the beginning.
Absolutely. And that gets into another important part that I think our audience loves to hear about. So You're getting at some of the limitations of the biopsy and the imaging, right? We can't always be assured of the where in the prostate any cancer exists. We just use our best judgment and our skills and experience to do as best as we can. And tell us about what you're excited about in terms of identifying the best candidate going forward in the future.
Yeah, so I think we're going to be pushing the boundaries. So there is now even a debate about whether we should treat all grade group two cases. We often do, but there's a good contingent, a good proportion of favorable, in inverted commas, grade group two with a small amount of percentage, pattern four, absence of cribriform, maybe a small lesion on MRI. It's not capsular abutting. Those are going to be really suitable factor zones. And we survey a lot of those men, as I know some of my colleagues in the US and Europe do as well. So that treatment paradigm is going to continually shift. And the new battleground for active surveillance is going to be in the intermediate space, in the grade group two space. And so I think focal therapy is going to be treating grade group three cases, the really significant grade group two cases, and we're going to start to treat some of those higher risk cases where the anatomy of the tumor and the prostate, provided we've ruled out distant disease properly, suits focal therapy. And I think we're going to increasingly, the vision statement, if you like, is we're going to be pushing more towards the high risk cases. And we've just finished recruiting into a trial looking at ablation for metastatic prostate cancer. So not just radiotherapy to the main prostate in the setting of metastatic disease, not just prostatectomy, but also ablation. And that's going to be done within a trial. It's going to have its readout next year called the ATLANTA trial.
Very exciting, very exciting. So, again, we're speaking to a general urology audience, and you're coming as an expert with a lot of experience in both staging and identifying tumors. Do you have any bits of advice that you would give? You have someone in practice, maybe in a community setting, wants to establish focal therapy, to establish their own registry or participate in one. What's some of the bits of advice you might give for someone starting out?
Just get the MRI right. The MRI is the most crucial part. And then do the biopsy yourself. If necessary, repeat the biopsy, repeat the MRI, and get that diagnostic from the beginning absolutely spot on. Because that was where you will benefit most. When you're starting off in doing focal therapy, use a well-known established modality. There are a lot of ablative modalities out there, and we don't know enough about some of the newer ones, and those companies are doing studies or need to do studies. But use an established one that we know about the longer-term follow-up. And we have data now on cryo, HIFU and IRE with 5 to 10 year data. So when you're setting off, I would start with established modalities and then pick low hanging fruit. Pick small, discrete lesions, grade group two, no T3 element, with a low PSA, maybe below 10, so that you get your confidence. Your first 20, 30 cases are highly successful, they get good outcomes. And your colleagues and yourself and your patient pool know that you're getting good outcomes. And then you can start to push the boundaries, just like we have over the last two decades. But start off small, start off slow, and collect your data, because that will be your most powerful advocate and that will be your most powerful shield against any.
Yes. And again, why this is why the guidelines all reflect that, right? Like, we need to be doing this responsibly, collecting the data, observing, having a protocol in place for when are we doing the follow-up MRI, when are we doing the follow-up biopsy, these obligatory things, to make sure that if we're going to do this, we're going to do it safely and we're going to analyze outcomes.
Sure.
So thank you for saying all that. Are you currently using any other biomarker on tissue or patients?
So, in the UK, because of that fortunate position of being able to use MRI in everybody, the role of tissue biomarkers is less pronounced. So, and the additional benefit, the additional delta that tissue biomarkers offer against MRI needs to be looked at very carefully. So I'm not against them, but we're not convinced enough to start using it wholesale. And then fluidic biomarkers, again, we're very fortunate with our imaging. So I think things like 4K and Stockholm and others will have a role in defining who should get an MRI, but we still haven't defined that quite yet.
Excellent. No, I think very well put. Thank you for saying that. Okay, we have another moment left for our audience. Is there anything else you want to say that you're excited coming down the pipes in the future?
So I think one of the things we're going to be talking about is the role of avoiding a biopsy. And that's exciting, but also quite scary. And everybody's thinking, hell, what do you mean avoiding a biopsy? So there may come a time, and people are talking about it, where we have enough clinical information, imaging information, fluidic biomarker information, maybe circulating tumors, cells, maybe circulating DNA, that we can determine a man has cancer, and maybe with very refined imaging and AI tools, we can start to even define risk categories. So I think that will be the next challenge over the next probably two decades, how we can bridge that gap. Every patient asks, do I really need that biopsy? Does it do anything harmful? And I think we need to rise to that challenging question.
And I'm glad you're rising to it, right? Because it takes a lot of resources, it takes a lot of time, thoughts, patience, and the willingness to put in the time for the clinical trials to assess it. So thank you. And thank you for joining us on the Euro Oncomic. This wraps up. This is our last interview for EAU 26.
So privilege.
It's the privilege is ours.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And take care, everybody.
Thank you.